Today is the third in a series of messages titled Faith at Home. So far, we have looked at the home as a seminary and the home as a trauma center. Now, some people were good enough to send us messages of ideas of what could come next in this series. Some people suggested the home is a man cave, the home is a she shed, the home is a zoo, the home is a spa, the home is a restaurant, and the home is a winery. Well, those are all really great suggestions, but I'm afraid what comes next in this series is a little bit less exciting. The home as a filling station. Until recently, we had an abandoned gas station right next to the church. Well, now we have a gas station that looks very busy, and I'm glad that they're there. But still, a filling station is not a very exciting-sounding business. Even the term filling station sounds a bit dated to me, but that's exactly what it is. Sooner or later, our gas tanks begin to run empty, and we need to get them filled up. Well, many families are running on empty. Calendars are filled, although maybe not as much these last couple months with the stay-at-home orders. And our homes are often filled with very expensive stuff, nice stuff. In fact, I saw a post recently that said, the average child today has more luxuries than royalty had 100 years ago. We got plenty of stuff, but families themselves are often running on empty. There are some stats to back that up. One person in five has a mental illness, and suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the U.S. The divorce rate is around 45%, down slightly, which is good, but it's still way too high. 23% of kids live in single-parent homes. 41% of families headed by a single mom live in poverty. 50% of young people will leave the Christian faith between the beginning of high school and the end of college. 50% don't stay in the faith. And in this time of social distancing and sheltering in place, we have seen an 18% rise in the use of porn, a 55% rise in alcohol use, and an 18% increase in the calls to domestic abuse hotlines. Clearly, many families are running on empty. Well, then what is the fuel that families need? The fuel that families need is love. Hollywood has not done a very good job of educating us on what love is. When we hear the word love, we might think of star-crossed lovers or feeling in love. The Bible does mention love a few times, but never once does it refer to love as a feeling. In the Bible, love is always a verb. It's an action, a commitment to do what is best for another person. Can you imagine God feeling in love with us? For God so loved the world that he gave us a box of chocolates for Valentine's Day. Well, in the English language, we really only have one word for love, love. But the word love, that one word, has so many different meanings. And I'm not a Greek scholar, but the Greek word has several different languages for different kinds of love. There's philos for brotherly love, or the love between family members and friends. There's eros for a romantic love between couples. And there's agape, which means unconditional love. So often when we think of love, we only think about romantic love or brotherly love. But when the Bible talks about God's love for his people, it is talking about agape, unconditional love. A love that is a commitment to do what is best for us. Or a love that responds to what we need. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. He saw us in such a desperate situation that he couldn't sit by and do nothing. That's how much he loves us. So he sent his son Jesus, and he acted on our behalf, even though it cost him very, very dearly. That's unconditional love. Agape is also the kind of love that is to characterize families. And often families will base their relationships on brotherly love, or married couples on romantic love. But brotherly love is often a you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours kind of love. It's a love that is based on performance or meeting expectations, and if that doesn't happen, parents might even withhold their blessing from their kids. Romantic love is not a good basis for marriage either. Often, couples will engage in scorekeeping. Well, I empty the dishwasher, so you should take out the trash. Or, as they've been married for a few years, the romantic feelings might begin to fade, and then they encounter life's real problems. And then, tragically, all too often, those families, those couples, head towards divorce. Can you imagine? In a family that is characterized by agape, children know that they are loved, even when they mess up, and so they're not afraid to try. Spouses know that they are loved, too, no matter how hard of a day they've had or when they've made mistakes. They know that their spouse loves them and is there with grace. Can you imagine having a long, hard day at work or at school? You're tired, and you're running on empty. And you get home and the work still isn't done. There might be chores to do or homework. And when you walk in the door, you are greeted by other people in your family who are also running on empty. Nobody is in a position to fill anybody else up. And so we need an attendant. An attendant is another kind of a dated term for me, just like filling station. You don't even really see the words self-serve on a gas station anymore. It's just understood. When you go to get gas, you're going to pump the gas yourself. But we need an attendant to fill us up. And our attendant, of course, is Jesus Christ. In our gospel reading today, Jesus encountered a woman at a well who needed to be filled up. It's a fascinating story, but there's so much in it that we who live 2,000 years later in a different culture, so many things that we don't connect with, and so the story loses a lot of its rich meaning. So here are a few things to consider about this story. First, it takes place around noon. Again, you think big deal, noon, so a lot of people run errands at lunchtime, that's fine, but in that part of the world, noon is hot. People don't do physically demanding chores at noon. They might have a siesta, but they save those busy, physically demanding chores for in the evening when it's cool. Also, this woman comes to the well alone. Again, so what? You might think she's independent. She doesn't need help. Well, back in those days, in that culture, women usually did go and do that chore at the well with other women, maybe for protection, maybe to help each other, maybe just to socialize with each other. But they usually went together in a group. This woman went alone. Why did she do that? Well, clearly she was trying to avoid other people. Why would she try to avoid anybody else? Well, in the course of their conversation, her conversation with Jesus, we learn why. You see, she had 5 previous husbands, and she was with a 6th guy, and they were just living together. Now, Jewish tradition of the day said that it was acceptable for a woman to be married 2, maybe 3 times at most in the course of her life. Maybe the first marriage was maybe he was a really bad guy and the divorce was necessary, or maybe unfortunately her first husband died at a young age, but certainly a woman would never need more than 2 or 3 marriages in her life. The fact that she had 5 and was working on a 6th, that tells us that she was exceedingly immoral. Well, no wonder she didn't want to associate with the other women of the town. Jesus also wasn't supposed to talk to her. A Jewish man wasn't supposed to talk to a Samaritan woman. This isn't just sexism. Back then, there was some serious hatred between Jews and Samaritans over some religious stuff that had happened hundreds of years in the past. Also, men usually didn't talk to women in public. That just wasn't something that they did. So a Jewish man should never have talked to a Samaritan woman in public. Also, Jesus was a teacher, and rabbis did not talk to women very often at all. It wasn't forbidden, but it was considered to be more of a distraction. A rabbi had more important things to do, like study the Torah or teach God's word to other people. Talking to a woman was just kind of a distraction. Well, if talking to this woman was a problem, then risking touching her was even worse. Jesus asked if he could have a drink from her jar. A jar that she might have had her lips on might have had her spit on it. That would have made Jesus ceremonially unclean and unable to go worship in the temple. So a Jewish man would never have risked touching a Samaritan woman. Well, after her immoral lifestyle was acknowledged, Jesus told her that he had a source of living water for her, and that if she drank of it, she would never be thirsty again. Well, that certainly got her attention. It was a very physically demanding chore, and it cost her a significant amount of social embarrassment. Of course, she was very interested in hearing about this. Well, she misunderstood what Jesus was saying. And as they talked, as Jesus listened to her, and as he talked to her, breaking all these social norms, she came to an understanding, a realization that she might have just found the long-promised Messiah. She got so excited by this, she was being filled up, and we know because she ran back to the town to tell other people about who she had just met, and she wanted them to meet him too. Now remember, just a few minutes earlier, she had been trying to avoid the people of the town. Now she's in a hurry to find them and tell them about this man Jesus that she had just met. This woman came to the well with an empty jar and an empty soul. She was able to fill the one, but she needed Jesus to fill the other, and he did. Talking about Jesus as the living water brings to my mind baptism. A lot of times people think that baptism is the beginning of a spiritual journey. You meet Jesus, you get baptized, and then you spend the rest of your life trying to become a better person, to do good things, and to be holy. But that's not actually how it works. Baptism is kind of the ultimate filling. After we're baptized, we then spend the rest of our lives loving God and loving other people. We are so filled with His love and grace that we now have much to give to others. Forrest Gump said that stupid is as stupid does. In the same way, we don't love God in order for Him to love us. We don't love others to try to get them to love us or think more highly of us. We love God because He first loved us. We love others because we're so filled with God's love in Jesus that we want to see others filled too, and we want to introduce them to the source of living water, Jesus, so their souls can be filled for eternity too. You might say that holy is as holy does. So the home is a filling station. Its fuel is agape, and its attendant is Jesus Christ. The home is a place where family members are filled with the love of Christ. What? You might say, isn't the church supposed to do that? Yes, we do that at church. When we congregate at the church, we do receive God's love. We are filled with Him, and we fill one another. But in some ways, the home does it even more effectively, and that's especially true right now when we are staying at home under orders from the government and we can't meet together in our church building. Well, what does a Christian home look like? Well, some of the characteristics are listed in the epistle reading for today in Colossians. Compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, patience, bearing with one another, forgiveness, peace, thankfulness, submission, obedience. You might hear a list like this and say, yeah, I've really got to work on patience. I'm not a very patient person. Or forgiveness is so hard to do. I just need to work on that and learn how to do that better. But really, these are Christ's virtues. When we spend more time with Him, when we get to know Him better, when we are filled with Him, we begin to look more like Him and we begin to act more like Him. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Family members living in the same house are filled with Christ by spending time together in His Word. They are filled by Christ at their baptisms, and so they remind each other every day of their baptisms and whose they are, who they belong to. Families that are filled with Christ get rid of things that don't fill or are false in their promise to fill. And there's evidence to back all this up. Couples that pray together every day have a less than 1% chance of divorce. Compare that to 45% chance for other couples. Even Christian couples don't look all that much different than non-Christian couples, 45% divorce rate. But when a couple prays together, their chances of getting divorced are less than 1%. And we said that 50% of young people leave the Christian faith from the time they start high school. The good news is the flip side of that, 50% stay in the faith. And we know what things those other 50% have in common. They have families that talk about the faith, that discuss difficult questions and don't shy away from tough questions about the faith. They have families that read the Bible together on a regular basis and families that serve together. We also know that Christians are 20% more likely to donate time and money. They are so filled with Christ's love and grace that they can't wait to share of their blessings with other people. So it's not about being religious, it's about being filled with Christ. We drink His living water and we receive His Holy Spirit through the Word and the sacraments. So many people these days are running on empty. Let's start being filled with Jesus, the living water, and start filling one another.